Okay, so in case you had not guessed what the theme of our Vacation Bible School is this year, we're talking about superheroes. It doesn't take you long to figure that out, right? You walk into the building, even before you walk in, you start seeing things out front, and a lot of great work's been put into this, and we're excited about it. And remember that our Vacation Bible School's for everybody. We've got classes from the youngest to the oldest, whoever the oldest is, we've got classes for everybody starting tonight, going through Wednesday night. So I was going to say the word was, like past tense. Maybe it doesn't need to be past tense, but who was your favorite superhero? Favorite superhero? Wow. Okay, I mean, it's like dead. It's like, are you all too old for superheroes? Batman. All right. Superman. Who? Wonder Woman. Okay. For some reason, I thought you said Wolverine, and I got the W, and I didn't get the rest of what you said. All right. Superhero. Jimmy? Bionic Man. All right. Yeah, all right. So y'all know superhero. Now, did anybody read comic books? I mean, where did you come up with superheroes? Comic books? Television? Your imagination? Any of you have any imaginary friends? Don't admit it. Sam already admitted it. So superheroes are kind of an intriguing concept. You know, here are individuals who have superpowers, right? Here are individuals that can do great things that are obviously beyond normal capabilities. What about historical figures? Instead of superheroes, what about heroes in history? You got any favorite historical heroes? Job, is that what you said? All right.
David.
Going straight to the Bible here. David, okay. All right, Dr. Martin Luther King. Lincoln. Spartacus, just because you like the name more than anything. What'd you say?
Jonathan.
Jesus. All right. Anytime you ask a question in Bible class, Jesus is usually a good answer to give. So a lot of heroes. Obviously, this morning, there's a direction that we've got for our time together, and that's just talking about, what about heroes in the church? When I was growing up, obviously, there were the superheroes that I liked. But for me, if we're talking about real-life heroes, in my life, real life heroes were people in the church. That's just the way my parents raised me, was to love the church, love people in the church. And so for me, some of the greatest heroes that I had growing up were individuals in the church. So I want us to think about that this morning. I want us to think about heroes that we need to have in the church. And I'm going to start by talking about elders, and not limited to current elders, not limited to just elders at Palm Beach Lakes, but just elders in the church in general. They ought to be heroes for us. When I was growing up, the elders in the church were held in great esteem in our home. They were looked up to. They were talked about in a very positive light. There weren't a lot of conversations in my home growing up that talked disparagingly about the elders. What would that do, by the way? And I was planning to talk about this more later, but what would that do to the little tender, soft heart of a child to hear mom and dad talking disparagingly about the elders? For example, does that have any impact at all, you think? Okay, it's going to undermine their authority. What's that? What kind of thought process? What kind of seed do you think that plants in the heart of a young child? You think it has an impact not just in relationship to the men that they know to be elders, but whether they want to grow up to be one. Whether they look up to these individuals now or in the future, You think it has any impact on them in relationship to just the church in general? Oh, well, the guys who lead the church, that's the kind of guys they are? Oh, well, the church isn't worth it. So we need to think about our comments, and that was not my intention to talk about at this point, but I want you to think about what the Bible says about elders. And I don't have time to talk about all of these, and I only intended, when I started making this list, I thought, okay, I'm just going to put two or three on the list. And then it just kept flowing. And so what do elders do? What's their job? Okay, their job is to shepherd the flock. You know, sometimes maybe if people didn't know much about the church and they were visiting with us on a regular basis and they were here and trying to get to know this church, it could be that if somebody didn't know much about the church, didn't know much about the Bible, but they just were visiting with us occasionally, it could be that some people might think that what elders do is that they make decisions. Because most of the time when public prayers are made for our elders, what do we pray for? Pray for them to make wise decisions. And that's a good thing to pray for. Do elders make decisions? Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. Is that the only function of an elder is to make decisions? No. It's not even close to the only function. And yet, sometimes, I think that's our mentality, is that elders, well, they're the guys who make the decisions. They decide, you know, are we going to put new carpet out there? Okay, what color is it going to be? Are we going to paint the walls? Okay, when are we going to do it? We're going to put one coat or two coats? And so people think that's the elders. They got to make those decisions. You know, are we going to hire somebody to cut the grass, or are we just going to get rid of the grass and put gravel out there so we never have to cut the grass again? I mean, okay, tough decisions that elders have to make. Okay, yeah, elders have got to do that kind of thing. You think that's why God put elders in the church? I'm going to put elders in the church who can decide about parking lots. I mean, where do you read about parking lots in the Bible? What verse? It's a necessity. But what do elders do? And Eva said it. Elders' responsibility is to shepherd the church. When you look at what God talks about when it comes to elders, the verb that's used to talk about their responsibility more often than not is to talk about to shepherd the flock of God. Now, do shepherds make decisions? Yeah. But what do shepherds make decisions for? They make decisions for the good of the sheep, for watching over the sheep. And that's why so many of these up here, that's what they're talking about, is the elders, their responsibility is to take care of this. Look in 1 Timothy chapter 3. 1 Timothy chapter 3, you're reading about the qualifications for elders. And you read these over in Titus chapter 1 as well. But sometimes we might look at these qualifications like they're a checklist, right? Like God's given you a shopping list. And when you go to the supermarket of men in the church, some of you women are thinking, oh, that's a pretty good supermarket. But, you know, realize that's not, some of those men are taken. But if you go to the supermarket of the church and God's given you a shopping list, all right, find this guy over here and you got to check off, you know, well, nope, that guy, I'm going to have to put him back on the shelf because, you know, he doesn't meet number four. Okay. God's giving us qualifications for a reason. But when he gives us the qualifications, verses 4 and 5, about the kind of home he is to have, the kind of man he's to be in the home and he's to have children, what is the reason in verse 5, what's the reason that God gives for giving these qualifications about how he raises his children? What is he going to end up doing in the church? He's going to be taking care of the church. If he doesn't know how to take care of his own household, how is he going to take care of the church of God? Sometimes we say that an elder's first flock is his own family. Well, that's kind of what God's saying here. You're going to get an idea of what kind of shepherd he's going to be in the church by what kind of shepherd has he been in his home. And that's why God's giving qualification. God's not just saying, let me come up with a random list of things and let's see if I can get these people to jump through hoops or not. No. It's these kind of individuals that are going to be responsible for taking care of God's church. And so what is our responsibility towards it? Look over in Hebrews chapter 13. You may know Hebrews 13 and verse 17 better than you know verse 7. And I know the elders know Hebrews 13 and verse 17 because it's a verse that weighs heavily on them, where in verse 17 of Hebrews 13 it says, obey those who rule over you and be submissive. You know why? Because they watch for your souls as those who must give an account. Let them do so with joy and not with grief, because that would be unprofitable for you. So a message to the church is you need to obey and be submissive to these men because they're watching out for your souls and they're going to give an account. But I want you to think about verse 7. When again, our responsibility toward them is not just to obey and submit to them. Remember, Hebrews 13, 7. Remember those who rule over you, who have spoken the word of God to you, whose faith, what does your Bible say after that? Whose faith what? Follow. Anybody have a different verb than the word follow? Imitate. All right? That's kind of vivid. I think the word imitate might be kind of more graphic, more vivid. So whose faith follow, whose faith imitate, and then the rest of the verse says what? Considering the outcome of their faith. What does that mean? So here, what'd you say, John?
Conduct.
All right, their conduct. So I'm looking at my elders, and I'm considering the outcome of their faith. Where has their faith led them? Their faith has led them to a faithful devotion to God. Their faith has led them to grow. Their faith has led them to become a leader in the church. Is that a faith worth imitating? I'm not saying they're perfect. No, the Bible's not saying they're. But God says you need to look at them and you need to imitate their faith, because where has their faith led them? When we look at the elders of our congregation, we need to think about them as heroes. And I'm not saying set them up on a pedestal. You understand that. I'm not saying say, well, they're perfect and they're never going to make mistakes. But if you're trying to help your children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, kids you dragged off the street into the church, whatever it may be, if you're trying to help them to have real life heroes, you got the superheroes. That's great. Real life heroes, you need to build up the elders in their presence. You need to love the elders in their presence, and help them to have an appreciation for who these men are and what they do. Number two hero in the church. You probably would have guessed it, right? Deacons. I'm so thankful for the deacons of this congregation. I'm thankful, and again, as I said about the elders, not just current men who are in that role, and not just those at Palm Beach Lakes, but those who are even in other places. When you think about deacons are individuals who they do things that, well, a whole lot of other people might not want to do in the church. They have tasks assigned to them. In Acts chapter 6, these men are not called deacons in Acts 6. So we don't know that they were deacons, but they look like deacons, they smell like deacons, they talk like deacons. They're taking on a role of deacons here, even if they're not that in Acts chapter 6. And what was the problem? Why all of a sudden are men needed to take care of something? What was the problem? What's going on in Acts 6? Feeding widows. What was happening? The widows, the Grecian widows specifically, so, well, we'll take care of our Jewish widows who are here from Jerusalem because they belong here. But these Grecian widows, they're out of town. They're foreigners. They don't belong here. We're not going to deal with them. Okay? So the Grecian widows are not being cared for in Acts chapter 6. What does it indicate to you that this required an intervention by God to get this covered? Nobody wants to do this. I mean, if somebody wanted to do it, step up and do it. Nobody wants this task. We're not going to do that. So it had to be an assigned task in the church to get it. And you think, boy, that's not very nice. Okay, well, whatever. But you go back then, and nobody was stepping up to do it. Now, when God establishes his church in Acts chapter 2, not only is it to be overseen by elders, but there are specific individuals, and 1 Timothy chapter 3 gives us the qualifications for these men. There are certain individuals who are to take on specific tasks in the church and that are assigned to them, that they're over. And Acts chapter 6 uses that word to set these men over this task. But their job is to serve. We may not think that's a very glorious job. I mean, serving, remember what Jesus said? Jesus said, who's greater, the one who's sitting at the table or the one who is serving? Remember when Jesus asked that in the upper room. Remember that? He's in the upper room with the disciples the night he's going to be betrayed, and he asked them, who's greater, the one who sits at the table or the one who's serving? Well, what do we think? And what did the disciples think? Who's greater? The one who sits, right? I'm greater. You're serving me. Yes, I would like another Coke. Thank you very much. And yes, some more breadsticks. That would be wonderful. Because I'm greater. And I'm the one at the table and you're the one serving me. Jesus asked that question because he knew what he was going to do. And he flipped the script on him. Because he went from sitting at the table to doing what? Gets up and washes their feet. There's another occasion where just like the Grecian widows weren't being taken care of because nobody would step up and do it. Had their feet been washed in the upper room? They're all sitting there at dinner and their feet had not been washed. Well, why not? Why hadn't their feet been washed? Because nobody was going to stoop that low to do it. Normally, there would have been a servant there to do the task, because that's the job of a slave, to wash feet. And apparently that individual was not there. They're in a friend's home in this upper room, and so there's not a slave there to do it. And so these 12 men file into the room, and Jesus comes in. Anybody going to get down and wash feet? You going to do it? I'm not going to do it. You going to do it? No, I'm not going to do it either. Nobody's going to do the task. So, fast forward back to our subject of deacons. Sometimes deacons are given responsibilities. Well, maybe nobody else wants to do them, or maybe it's just a task that it has to be done. There are certain tasks in the church that there are things that just need to be done. And so, I grew up in a home with my dad as a deacon of this congregation. And another thing about deacons is that people don't always know what they do. A lot of times what they do is behind the scenes, where you're not getting a lot of accolade, you're not getting a lot of compliments, because some of the things that deacons do are things that nobody else knows that they are doing. And as a kid, I remember seeing that. I remember seeing my dad do stuff that, well, nobody else is going to know that my dad did this. Well, guess what? It didn't matter. Didn't matter who did it. What mattered is that it got done. And so when I think about heroes in the church, I think about elders. And we need to urge our children to respect. And again, this isn't just directed at parents towards children. Obviously, this is for all of us. We need to hold up elders. We need to esteem deacons in this congregation. We need to appreciate them. We need to let them know that they are appreciated for what they do. Turn over to, real quick, 1 Timothy chapter 3, unless you're already there. Any comments on any of this? I'm doing a lot of talking. Y'all are really quiet this morning. All right, so 1 Timothy chapter 3. You don't just read about elders in 1 Timothy 3. You don't just read about deacons in 1 Timothy chapter 3. Another group of individuals that you read about in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 11 are the wives of church leaders. Isn't that interesting? That as you go through these verses reading about these men and the qualifications they need to meet, there's a listing of qualifications in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 11 that their wives must be reverent, not slanderers, temperate, faithful in all things. Interesting that God said, you know what, in order for these men to be qualified to do the task that they need to do, their wives need to be individuals of character as well. So wives help their husbands to be qualified. Is it possible that a wife could prevent her husband from being qualified to be a deacon or an elder? And that's a reality, and that's not some arbitrary decision that some church makes. It's a qualification that God gives right here. It says that their wives need to have these qualities about them as well. And so when we look at the wives of church leaders, we need to recognize that these are individuals, they make sacrifices too. They make sacrifices of their husbands, their time, their energy, sometimes have to sacrifice family time in order for things that need to be done for the church. And so these are individuals that I think need encouragement. Because sometimes they can get a little discouraged, perhaps. And so I think maybe these are individuals who need some encouragement. Who else would you put in a list? And maybe I want you to think about that question. I'm going to come back and let you answer it. Who else would you put in a list of heroes in the church? I begrudgingly am going to add another one to the list. We're not going to stay here very long because I don't want to. But I'm putting it up here. Not for any self, are you listening? Not for any self-serving reasons, not because of what David does for a living. It has nothing to do, remember, I'm not talking about just here at this church, I'm talking about in general. I grew up in a home where preachers were heroes. My parents did not, and this is where I intended to talk about what we did with the elders, my parents did not talk disparagingly about the preacher or his sermons. And I'm not telling you what to tell your kids about David and his sermons, okay? Here's my point. What you say to your children about the preacher is much bigger than what you say to your children about the preacher. And if you don't believe that, we need to sit down and talk. Because it's the nature of raising your kids. Take it outside the church. If your kids come home and they don't like the teacher at school, oh yeah, your teacher, she's rotten. She's horrible. You shouldn't like her. You shouldn't listen to her. She's the worst person I've ever met. Great. All right, Melissa, what's going to happen when the kid comes back to school the next day? Going to be disrespectful, not care anything about the teacher. Forget about school. I'm not going to pay attention in school. In fact, I hate school right now. What'd the parent do? Parent helped to plant some of those seeds by not guarding their mouth. And so it's okay not to like the preacher, no, okay not to like the sermons, but we need to be careful about how that's presented around our children and around others, because there is a larger context. We're trying to get our children to heaven. Now, the preacher may be a sorry, no good nothing that's helping your children get to heaven, but you're trying to help your children get to heaven. Is the church going to have anything to do with helping you? Does the church need to have any part in their lives and help it? Yeah. Seek ye first. It's got to be an integral part of their lives. And so I'm spending more time on this than I want to, but we need to do what we can to help our children to love the church. And that involves helping them to love everybody who serves the church in whatever capacities that might be. And if we want our children to grow up, if we want our boys to grow up to be elders, we want our boys to grow up to want to be deacons, we want our boys to want to grow up to be preachers, then those people need to be admired. They need to be talked about in positive ways in our homes. We need to be excited about those people. We need to be excited about going to church with our kids, because that helps to create within them an understanding of what's really most important in this life. So, all right, more time on that than I wanted to. We're going to get off of that because It's not about David, but I want you to see the bigger picture. Number whatever we're on. Here are some of the greatest heroes I think we have in the church. And it's our teachers. Our teachers, and I think about the teachers in this church, but not just the teachers in this church, but in every congregation, they are some of the greatest folks in the church because they have one of the most difficult jobs, 45 minutes with your kids, and lots of them. Every year I grow in deep respect for our teachers, especially when we have his kids camp like we did yesterday. We had 14 kids age 5 through 11 in his kids camp yesterday. And after 2 minutes, I was worn out. And here they are in 45 minutes with these kids. But they are some of the greatest heroes in the church. When was the last time our teachers got a paycheck? For teaching, any of our teachers ever gotten a paycheck? For Jeff, I mean, you're the deacon in charge. You haven't issued any paychecks recently, right? You know what? 100% volunteer. What? Volunteer? To go and teach? Yeah. To go and teach these kids. Volunteer to go do it. Now, some of them we have to encourage them a little extra hard to want to do it and to. Convince them that they want to do it, but they willingly go in, sacrifice their time in preparation, sacrifice their time for a period of about 12 weeks from themselves being in Bible class and being fed. You know, if you go in there and you're teaching, you're not being fed. You are in your preparation, but you're the one giving and giving and giving. And after a while, guess what you need? You need to get that filled back up. You need to come back to big boy and big girl Bible classes where you can get fed again so that you can go back and give some more. But these are some of the, to me, our Bible class teachers are some of the biggest givers in the church. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, Paul talks about giving. You know this in 2 Corinthians chapter 8. And he talks about these Christians from Macedonia. Remember what he talked about them? He talked about their poverty. These were not rich people from Macedonia. But he says, out of their deep poverty, they gave liberally. Okay? So here individuals, they didn't have much to give, but whatever they had, they were given it. All right? Take that out of the context of just money that you put in a basket. How does that apply to us in general in life? Okay, God, I don't have much to offer. What does God say? I'll take whatever you got. Whatever talents, abilities that you have. But that's not the point I wanted to bring up in 2 Corinthians chapter 8. It says, 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 5, they not only gave freely and they gave willingly, but they first, the end of verse 5 says, they first gave of themselves. Before these Macedonians ever put money in the basket, they first put themselves in the basket. And once they put themselves in the basket, what do they have left to hold back? God, you've got it all. You can have it all. And for me, that's what these teachers down this hallway do. Is that they have thrown themselves into the basket. And I mention this a lot when we come to this text because in my mind, I think about high jumpers. I think about pole vault jumpers in the Olympics. And what what one Olympian said at one time is, he was asked, how do you get your body over the bar? How can you get all the way up over the bar? And he said, first, I throw my heart over the bar. And then the rest just follows. He just is throwing himself into it so much that he says, I throw my heart over the bar, and then, well, the rest of me just kind of follows. And that's what happens with our teachers. They throw their hearts into teaching our kids. Thank you for doing that. Do you remember your Bible class teachers when you were a kid? Yeah. Quite an impact that they have. And they did it out of pure love for trying to teach kids the Bible. What greater thing could they do? John?
People just give their heart.
Yeah. And that's you're right, John. And that's That's, you know, when you look for heroes, you know, even your superheroes, what'd they do? They went over and above. They gave themselves. They helped. And that, and that's the word that John's using here, is that, you know, what makes folks great is what they do to help other people. And this church is full of helpers who are selfless in their efforts. You know, are whether it be the teachers or whoever else, they're not doing it for what they get out of it. They're doing it, pouring themselves into the lives of our kids because we're trying to get our kids to heaven. What about, let me mention one more real quick, and then I want to get to one. This is where I wanted to get and to spend a good part of the class because it applies to all of us. But what about church office workers? What about them, Ivan says. You know, I could spend a lot of time here, and I won't. You know, we've had somebody working in this church office for 50 years. It's not Ivan. But June has set the bar for everybody else that works in the office. She set the bar of work ethic. She set the bar of excellence and of just devotion and pouring your heart in and doing everything not for self but to the glory of God. And fortunately, everybody who has come in has been influenced in that direction to the point that those folks who do work in the office are some of the most giving, selfless individuals. I think they follow Colossians 3, verse 23, that says, whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord. And in some respects, I hesitate to put this particular one on the screen because some of you, and here's the reason, because some of you think they're getting paid. They're getting paid by the church. They better do this stuff. Okay. You could have an argument there, maybe. But just because people working in the office get paid by the church doesn't mean they have to do a good job. It doesn't mean that they have to pour their hearts into it. It doesn't mean that they have to do it selflessly the way that they do it. It doesn't mean that they have to want the very best for everything that this church does, to want it to be superior in every way, not so that somebody will pat them on the back, because most of the time nobody knows that they've done it, but so that God will look good and that God will get the glory for what's done. And I'm thankful that's what happens with folks who work for the church. And Cindy and Ivan are exceptional in that regard. But let me say this. We've got 6 minutes to talk about this category. Everybody that I just mentioned is a hero in the church, but they don't wear a mask. And you're like, what are you talking about? You know who they are. Elders, you know who they are. Deacons, you know who they are. The wives of these men, you know who. The teachers, you know who they are. Their names are in the bulletin. And if you don't know them, you can walk up and down. So the point is, these are individuals who are heroes in the church, but they're not wearing a mask. You recognize them. You know who they are. But are there heroes in the church who do wear a mask? You don't know who they are. You don't know what they've done. I mean, what was the deal that nobody knew who Superman was? I mean, is that really hard? But they, what do you mean? It's this guy. But then there's this clumsy, nerdy guy who writes for a newspaper, and the farthest thing you would ever think is this four-eyed guy. No, I mean, the last person on earth that Superman could be would be this dork over here. But yet, here's this guy who's got glasses, and for whatever reason, the glasses are hiding his identity from everybody in the world, right? But yet, it's that guy who's doing all of this. What does that say about all of us? Wait, it's she did that? I didn't know that. Should that be our goal? You know, there's so many things that are done by individuals of this church that we have no idea who's done it. And for some of you, a lot of you, that's the way you want it. You get kind of giddy. You get kind of funny and silly when you've done something and nobody else knows that you've done it. I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying this. Somehow, some way in eternity, I'm going to get in trouble for saying this. Cindy, I don't even think I should mention her name. We had one of our ladies who would bring turkeys by here. She's gonna kick me when I get to heaven, so I don't even think I'm going to mention her name. I'm scared of her even today. But she would bring turkeys by a week before Thanksgiving, put them in the freezer. And she'd say, find people in the church who need a turkey for Thanksgiving, but don't you dare tell them that I brought it. So I never told them because I was scared of her. And I didn't want her to come after me. What was the deal? That woman, if I mentioned her name, and some of you know who it is, if I mentioned her name, you'd say, yeah, she was a hero in this church. But what was the deal? She wore a mask. Nobody knew that she was bringing turkeys by. And this little old lady, she didn't need to be carrying those 20-pound turkeys. But she went to Publix and bought them out. And brought, give these away. Those are heroes. But you don't know who they are. You don't know what they do. And I'm going to put all of this up here because we're flat out of time here. But heroes in the church are not interested. Remember what Jesus said in Matthew 6 about those Pharisees? They do things to be seen by men. Is that a hero? No, that's a hypocrite, the other H word. That's a hypocrite. That's a zero. You're exactly right, John. That's not a hero. That's a zero. And if you want to go from a zero to a hero, you need to put a mask on and say, it's not about me. It's not about the attention that I get from this. It's not about making sure that people can pat me on the back and I get approval from men. In Galatians chapter 1 and verse 10, Paul says, you can't have both. You can't have the approval of men and the approval of God at the same time. So the point is, pick one. Which one do you want? And those individuals who are true heroes in the church to me are those that they don't go around looking for the praise. They don't go around looking for the pat on the back. They are truly servants in the very definition of the term. One last verse. Look in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, and our time is going to get us. Look in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, and I've got this on the screen, but I want you to see it. You may know verse 2 because we quote verse 2 perhaps more than we quote verse 1. 1 Corinthians 4 verse 2 says it is required in stewards that one be found faithful. What's a steward? Somebody who is responsible for managing things that don't belong to them. The manager at the store, the manager at the restaurant where you go today for lunch, is just the manager. Do they own it? No, they don't own it. They're just working there. But they're responsible for making sure everything goes just right. All right, so what are we? We're stewards. Do we own this world? Don't think so. Does it belong to us? Nope, not at all. What am I? Just a steward. What about my body? Does it belong to me? Nope, 1 Corinthians chapter 6 says your body doesn't belong to you. Nothing you have, nothing you see belongs to you. It all belongs to God. So what am I? I'm a manager. I'm a steward. And what's required of me, the last word in verse 2, what's required of me as a steward? Got to be faithful in what God's given to me. Verse 1 is what I want you to see. Let a man so consider us, Paul says, apostles and church workers, as servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. You see on the screen that the word that's used here for stewards, I love this Greek word, is a word that literally means an under rower. When those old, ancient nations would go to battle with each other, if they had some kind of a navy and had some kind of ships, they could go out and they would go to battle, and the captain, you know, the guys who were really important, they would be up on deck. But down below deck, down below in the dark place, were these people that nobody knew about, but they were getting the job done. They were the under deck, under rowers. Where was the ship going to go without them? What battle was going to be won without them? Nothing, nothing, nothing. But who knows their face? Nah, nobody. But they were getting the job done. They were under rowers. Here's the point about that. That word doesn't just describe some people in the church. It describes all of us. Because none of us are the ones who are up on deck. That's Jesus. We're just under rowers. We're trying to get him where he needs to be. We're trying to get his job done. And it doesn't matter if I ever get attention for it. It just matters if I'm doing my job. And that's what makes heroes in the church, is what John said. Just people who want to help, people who want to serve. Thank you all very much for your attention this morning.